The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hey guys, welcome to Who's On Content, a show that explores and dissects the influential, behavioral altering power of content through thought-provoking, culturally relevant, and industry-shifting dialogues. I'm your host, of course, EJ, Head of Special Projects at DBA, and I'm so fucking excited for you to join me on this journey of getting to know the innovative leaders and creators in our insanely addictive industry of content marketing. I mean, if content is the only influencer of behavior, we might as well figure out who's on content. Let's get into it. Hey, hey, it is another episode of Who's On Content. Hawa, you are on content when it comes to the content of food and changing how people engage with it, how they interact with it. And so let's just dive into it. We always like to ask our guests, how do you define content?
I think the way I like to define content is from the ground up. So community being one. What is it that I'm creating and who's it for? So content can be my personality I share. It could be tips and tricks to living healthier and fuller, even if that's in conversation.
Yeah.
And so I like to think of content as any and everything I do every day. And who is that for is really where I start.
Oh, yes. Tailor the message so it's well received for the intended audience.
Right. And maybe I should probably pull back and say that the content is the message, whatever the message might be. The message might be the curls, the message might be the red lip. The recipe, the message might be the writing, it might be the storytelling.
Yeah.
But I think the base of that, like none of that, the message wouldn't matter without the people.
Ooh, the message would not matter without the people because who was the messenger? You are. And so take us back for a second. I mean, we're going to get into all the receipts that make you you, but before you were known or came to be known as a James Beard award winning. Okay. Where did your love of just life, your love of food, your love of community come from?
It definitely came from the women that I'm born to.
Yes.
Who had me at a very young age, I would say is the biggest influence in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way my mother moves around the world is, how can she set up base and how can she create groups of people around her? She's mm-hmm. done that her whole entire life. So when you're saying, where do these things come from? The yeah. very first place I think is just my mother and the women that she's born to.
So like home for you is always your center and always where you come back to.
Absolutely. And home for me, and I've said this before, home for me is wherever my mother is.
Home for me is wherever my mother is. That's good.
Yeah, whether it be in Oslo, where her residence is, whether it be Kenya, whether it be, you know, if she's in Brooklyn, home is Brooklyn.
I love that. So Hawa, tell me, when did you professionally get into the food space?
I got into the food space in 2014 when it was not cool.
And tell the girls, because the Ponderosa, whatever we calling her this week, she flipped the script on two industries, really. Well, actually three. Beauty from a skincare perspective, because prior to the pandemic, all people cared about was color cosmetics. It was like, beat that face for going outside. We were inside and the girls was like, I need a hyaluronic serum. I need a niacin. I need an eye cream. And you can keep that palette. Come on. Face card never declines. My God. Okay. But then also home. Like everyone was bored in the house and in the house bored and looking around like, ooh, I hate that wallpaper. Ooh, I hate that chair. Ooh, I hate that console. And so a lot of people invested in their personal spaces more because you spent more time there. But the food industry, people did one of two things. They became premium members, whatever you want to call them, of Uber Eats, DoorDash, or whatever it was, or they bought more cooking utensils, bought more pots and pans.
It became the way of their lives.
Literally changed the way they engaged with food because it was just like, we don't have this money. We can't go outside. Let's order these groceries. Let's try these recipes. So people like you who have been doing this for 8 years, especially as a immigrant woman, okay, coming into a space that is predominantly white male dominated or white female dominated, 2014, wow, that was maybe 4 years after the invention of Instagram.
I think Instagram came alive around, about 4 years, 2010.
Yeah, 2010. So you, And she was just a photo sharing platform. Like, it was like, here's what I'm eating at.
And the goal was to just filter your photos.
Yes. Okay.
So you postcard.
So you start in 2014. Where are you cooking? What are you cooking? What is the scene in 2014 for Hawa?
2014 food industry, not diverse, quite bland, very, very similar types of people cooking other cuisines, calling it by a different name, co-opting and whitewashing. That was happening a lot back then and still happens, but now I think people are more mindful of it thanks to the internet. 2014, I decided to go into the food industry because I felt that there was a white space, for lack of a better word, for the products I wanted to see on the shelves. Mm-hmm. I went to the supermarket and did not feel myself to be reflected in the aisles.
Okay.
And I'm not reflected at the supermarket. I'm not spoken well about on the TV and in the news. What has to give?
Yeah.
So my mother, who's an entrepreneur, we started talking back and forth about what would it look like if I were able to have conversations about who we are.
Mm. And who are you? For those that don't know,
I am Hawa Hassan, who is a Somali-born woman. I identify as a woman. I am a girl who lives in Brooklyn now. I've been here for 18 years, but originally I was born in Mogadishu, raised in Kenya, then later on went to school in Seattle. So that's a bit about me. So when I didn't see myself reflected, I started to think about, if you don't see yourself anywhere, how can you trust what these people to say to be true about who you and your people are?
Right. They don't know you. They don't know the content of you. So how can they create content that represents you?
They don't have experience and they don't have understanding of who I am. And so what they're shouting from the rooftops to a group of people about who Somalis are, whether we're pirates or violent or terrorists.
Because that was what the content was.
That's what the content was in 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017.
Yeah, it was like the Somalian pirates were jumping on the ships. And it's like, I don't think that they all are bred to be pirates, y'all. Like, it's giving really, you know what I mean?
Like, and then saying that we're robbing you for occupying our seaboards and overfishing. Anyways,
period.
Another day. But I started to examine this idea of what does it look like to tell your own story? And that's where my packaged goods business was born, because I didn't want to alienate people or get in a space and start telling bold, loud stories about who we were. I wanted to invite people to a table.
And ladies and gentlemen, who's on content? Hawa Hassan. I wanted to invite people to a table, to come at them, even though they were coming at us sideways, but to offer them the opportunity to get to know me,
Grace.
Get to know us. Oh,
that's right.
I love that. And that is that where
that's where my hot sauces were born. Mm-hmm. And for me, I understood about the American eater. They didn't, especially 2014, nobody wanted their table occupied. You needed to kind of massage people into the opportunity of trying new foods, using new foods as a cultural gateway.
Mm.
And so the condiments were supposed to inch me onto the table. They did that. And then we went from the farmer's market to Whole Foods to Dean and DeLuca nationally. And in 2018, I pitched my cookbook in BB's Kitchen. Now that people were familiar with using our condiments and were aware of the spices that were in them and loved them, I wanted them to give them agency to make the food.
Mm.
So I wrote in BB's Kitchen, named it BB, which means grandmother, because I knew that everybody could pronounce B-I-B-I, BB.
Unless they said Bibi, and you'd be like, what is going on? BB.
Yeah, maybe that's an accent that they put on there.
Always like to give our listeners like that moment of clarity when the content is content-y. And so when you said you wanted to give them permission and invite them to make the foods, it's so interesting when we think about, no matter what we do, our story will be retold, and it will be retold in a million iterations. Some true, some true, some false, but the story will be told in a way that people receive it. And what you wanted was for people to tell the story of you, your culture, your people, that it's a rich culture. It's a beautiful culture. It's a flavorful culture.
And it's not monolithic.
It's not a monolithic, right? Which we're always trying to say, even as Black Americans. And yeah. So once they were able to take that all in through your hot sauce and understand like, oh my God, this is beautiful. You wanted to then say, okay, they understand this chapter or this novel of the story. I can give them another piece of the story.
Yeah, they're ready for the second phase.
They're ready for the second phase. So MBB's Kitchen was published in 2018.
It was published 2020. I sold it
2020. In 2020. You sold it. Yes, let the girls know. So she sold the concept.
In Random House. Yeah, and then it takes a year to make a cookbook and then a year to do the marketing and everything. So it came out October 2020. And, you know,
at the height of the pandemic. I mean, we were like, oh, girl, this is it. We're here.
Right. So, you know, what you just said in regards to how do you know? I think you just said, how do you know when you're at the right place or you're doing the right thing?
Yeah.
To have the foresight to sell something in 2018, to know that it takes 2 years to come out, right? So to come give get enough information about what you're doing. So within those 2 years, I was working on the book, which is based on the 8 African countries that touch the Indian Ocean. And that was strategical. It was like, the American eater knows the Indian Ocean because they know India. They know about the spice trade a little bit. Mm-hmm. How do I then use that? How do I use the Indian Ocean as the forming identity of these countries that I'm trying to tell this story about, right? Mm-hmm. So when you cook from MBB's Kitchen and you cook a Tanzanian dish, very often someone will make a biryani and say, oh my God, this tastes just like the Indian food I order. And it's like, well, yeah, we all share the same spices.
Yes.
We're on the Indian Ocean, right? So right. It's educating, but doing it in a way that everyone can feel like, ah, I'm having an aha moment from having uh-huh. So just like playing around with the sensory and trying to educate without educating, if that makes sense.
Of course. It's almost like loving without loving, right? It's like your mom isn't there, but the conversations you have with her tells her that she loves you, even if when you hang up, she doesn't say, I love you.
Absolutely. So in the 2 years where there was that gap, I was working on the cookbook, I took it a step further. And I joined the Test Kitchen at Bon Appetit to teach people on YouTube how to make the foods that were getting ready to come out.
Now, prior to the Pondi, were mm-hmm. you using digital media, social media to kind of promote your hot sauces and like your different recipes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I was writing for other people's cookbooks. I was writing recipes for places like Food 52, Epicurious, Bon Appetit.
But yes, then, the girls was contributing content where content needed to be contributed.
I was trying to flood the market with my ideas of what I believed was missing. And so in 2018, I wrote the BA editor-in-chief at the time, Adam, and I said, hey, I think you're really missing an entire continent and you have an opportunity here to bridge the gap for your audience. And so he said, why don't you pitch me? And I sent him a full deck called Hawa at Large and what I could offer him and his audience.
You talk about manifestation and foresight, because Hawa, you are at large right now. And ma'am, I am here for it. And this is what I'm saying. When you are open to service, right? Like, I think a lot of people don't see themselves or don't have enough representative content. And for whatever reason, rightfully so, it's not bad, but they become very hardened to the opportunities or what's available to them, or even don't even want to do the work because they're like, why do I have to always be the one? Because you are the messenger. You are the vehicle. If not you, then who? If not now, then when? And you saw an opportunity to, one, let these girls know that you are, okay? And just the sheer kahunas, as they like to say, to email the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit and be like, check it. The content ain't content for a whole different continent. And let me tell you why. And so from there, you were given the opportunity to do what?
He brought me in to the Test Kitchen to shoot my first video, which was, I did a thing called Dagalbumbe, which is a beautiful, bright stew that's made with chicken and coconut and yogurt. And I think a lot of the editors at that institute thought, oh, this is so interesting. She's making a stew with coconut and chicken, coconut milk, and it doesn't separate. It was like this technique that they had never they didn't know about. And obviously that's why you need somebody else with a different perspective to show how maybe people in their orbit eat. And that video became a hit. That recipe became a hit. It still is made often on the internet. And so from there, I was brought in to shoot two more videos. And very quickly, I saw the reason why there weren't people like me in that test kitchen, because it wasn't and I've never talked about this publicly. And when BA went up in the air, I had already left.
Yeah.
And I left for the reasons why it went up in the air and why it was canceled was the reason I left. I was the only Black person there. And it was very clear to me that there wasn't any intention to change that. And I didn't be used.
Right. You was like, I'm here to change the narrative. I'm not here to own the narrative.
Right.
And that is such a great segue into the fact of the matter that it goes without saying that every industry could use a little bit of a flavor, a little culture. But food is one of those places where people are a little bit more experimental, right? Like we order egg foo young and we like, I love Chinese food. But then if you eat traditional Chinese dishes, people are like, what the fuck is this? It's like, right. There are unique, diverse ethnic cuisines that come to America that then have to be quote unquote Americanized for most American sensitive palates.
Group of people.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the truth of it is, even Chinese food, right? When you dissect that, Chinese food is not only flavorful, but it's diverse within its borders.
Right. And
to group a whole group of people and say, oh, this is Chinese food, the way that we've been taught in America, it's a disservice to a whole entire country. I mean, look at the food industry now. They're like, oh, Sichuan food and this and that. And I'm like, okay, so now you've discovered there are different types of Chinese food.
Right.
Cool. Now let's learn that there are different types of African countries.
That part. Now that we've had a lot of Asian dishes within the American cuisine, there is a excitement and appetite, pun intended, for another type of cuisine. And African cuisine has hit the scene in a way, I would say, and you can let me know if I'm right or wrong, in the last 5 years, because we've been hearing jollof rice.
Jasmine rice made with a tomato base, and depending on which country you're from, it's made either party style outside on a stove or in an oven. But
ladies and gentlemen, Hawa Hassan is on content. And so from there, it made total sense that an institution like BA would blow up, just like any institution that has not been diverse in nature. Right? The leadership isn't diverse, so the content isn't diverse because no one has that shared experience of, hey, we actually do it this way in my country and it's edible. And so you're a recipe developer, correct?
I'm a recipe writer, sure.
Okay.
It's in my wheelhouse for sure.
Yes. Let people know what it means to be a recipe developer, because I think a lot of people don't know that when you're putting together a cookbook, either you are a recipe developer or you work with someone that develops recipes.
Right. So a recipe developer is somebody who has the capacity to create a recipe from start to finish. Very often the way that cookbooks work is I can write a recipe in a headnote, which is the headnote would be an abbreviation of what's going to be inside, right? A summary, a short summary of like three sentences of what to be expected from the recipe. It could be personal, or it could give more context to why the recipe is the way that it is or what makes it special. And then the recipe really is how many tablespoons of such and such are you going to use, and how long is it going to be cooked? How should something be cut? And that comes very easily for me, and I enjoy doing that. What I really, really enjoy doing, and the reason why I got into recipe creating, is because I knew I couldn't tell these stories without offering teacher from an authority perspective. Like, this is how you make this dish.
Right.
This is what makes it great. So informing people about it. And I studied a bunch. Like, I studied people that I respected and I thought were like Otto Lange. I was like, okay, his recipes have like 50 ingredients in it, but somehow, somewhere, someone is cooking this and really enjoying it. And so I started to cook those recipes at home to see if this is for the home cook, what was challenging, you know?
Right. I love that. And so for Best Foods, your hot sauces. How many hot sauces did you launch with, and how many hot sauces are currently available in the offerings?
We launched with 2 and now we have 5.
And what are those flavors?
We have 3 more products coming, and I'll just say there's a pasta sauce coming. Ooh, there is
a spicy pasta sauce?
Yes. And very flavorful. There is a South African sauce coming. There's a West African sauce coming. And there's an East African sauce coming.
So you're giving the girls all the content. You're giving all the content from all of the areas that your tribe, right? I think you have such a beautiful tribe of beautiful souls and beautiful people that surround you, which is kind of like what you were saying earlier that your mom does. She kind of builds that foundation of love so she can do what is necessary for her to do in her life. Let's talk about James Beard Award. You won a James Beard Award in 2022, correct?
Right.
For your cookbook.
In Baby's Kitchen, that's right.
In Baby's Kitchen. Give people the context of the overall James Beard Award, what it means to be a James Beard Award winning chef or cookbook author or whatever. Once you're a James Beard Award winning, it's James Beard Award winning. It's almost like Emmy winner, Oscar winner, like those types. It's not even nominated. It's like, no, you are at the top of the top. But even when you think about how few Black Oscar winners there are very few Black James Beard Award winning chefs. And then don't even talk about women. So how impactful and monumental and historical was it for you to win that award?
So the way that a lot of these things happen, and I think so many people don't know this, like the Oscars, like the Emmys, the nomination comes from whether it be your production company or your publishing house. So my publishers wrote me and said, hi, we'd love to put in BB's Kitchen up for a Beard. Do you want to write the statement? And so I wrote 2 statements. One was very direct, which was like the reasons why I did it and how grateful I am that I was in a position, et cetera, et cetera. And then the second one was talking to the Beards about the many missteps that the industry has had in terms of inclusion and how glad I was to see them honoring and taking a break from the year before and coming back anew and telling them that I too believe in those values and I uphold those values. Yep. And I live, it's reflective in my work. My publisher chose the first statement, which she said was nicer in tone, which was fine. So the first thing is that you self-nominate. Obviously, I did nominate myself, but my publishing house did.
Yep.
Then the second part of that is when the nominations were announced and the book was announced, I thought to myself, I said, oh, that's great. Like the book has already done beyond my wildest dreams.
Right.
So that played to me, I didn't write it for a Beard.
You wrote it to give your now growing community permission and the opportunity to further learn and engage with you, your community, and your culture.
And I wish so many people understood that what EJ just said is where the content is. That's the integrity of the content.
Yep.
So I wrote this project for us. I wrote it for the people that wanted to use food as a cultural gateway.
Yes.
I wanted to give voice to where I came from. Everything else has been icing. But what I didn't know is, I think I bought my ticket to go to the Beards 2 days prior because I was going to the Congo a few days after for my next project.
Yes.
And so I was dreading going. But when I got there, when my name was announced and the book won, I got really emotional because
you had no idea. You just was like, girl, I'm just going to go kiki with the girls. It was cute to be nominated. I'm good. I'm Gucci.
That's what I thought. But I have to say that there was something about the validation after working so hard, after being told no one is interested in what you're selling.
Yeah.
After not being credited when people copy you. After my mother relocating from country to country to look for a safe haven. Like all of this came flooding. Mm. And I got so emotional because I think at that moment on the stage, I understood that the opportunity wasn't only for me. It's for everyone that's come with me.
And will come after you.
Absolutely.
Ooh. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we need representative content. Because representative content gives us representative storytelling that then inspires people. If they can, because of you, I can.
Yep.
Right? And we have to always ask ourselves, for however long we're on earth or, you know, whatever we believe happens after last little goodbye, what that content that we put out into the world does for others. It could entertain, it can educate, it can inform, it can inspire, it can do all of those things. But I think very few content creators like yourself are able to do something that leaves a legacy. It's like the James Baldwins of the world, the Aretha Franklins, like these people that entertained us through their words, through their music. Like, you're entertaining us through your food, through our stomachs. Like, the content of food, when you actually enjoy food, which in its most natural state, when we think about it, is for survival. Like, you got to eat. Like, you got to eat to survive. But what you're doing is giving us permission to thrive in the survival of life. Because life is life and kicking people's asses.
I know, that's right. It sure is. My tail is kicked right now.
Listen, I'm like, sis, ding, 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 girl, halftime. Like, pause for a second. But the beauty of life is that even in those moments where it doesn't feel like we're thriving, we're able to survive and have experiences through food. And so when people eat your food, if you thought to yourself, like you said, James Beard Award winning, you're in all of these amazing stores, all of this is icing on the cake. What you set out to do was build community through an understanding of culture that some might not have ever heard about, right? And to unite people around a simple idea of food being a cultural gateway. If someone was to try your hot sauce or cook a recipe from MBB's kitchen, what would you want them to ultimately take away from that experience?
I want them to feel what they feel in my company, which is warm.
And I do feel warm every time I'm around you.
Right? I mean, last time we were here, we spent a whole day together.
It feels like love. It feels like family.
Right. And I think to my detriment, it's my superpower. And so when I welcome anybody into my orbit or in any of the creations I make, I want the takeaway to be, oh, validation, warmth, love, respect, experience, seen. And I hope that that's the way my food and my writing makes people feel.
You have been able to really change an industry or it permeate into an industry that wasn't designed for you to thrive. When you think about the advent of social media and now TikTok and this idea that people only respond to 15-second videos, there's a lot of food content on TikTok that is now taking over because food is now the new fashion and beauty.
There's right? more food on the internet videos than there is anything else.
That's right it. Now, that's it.
There's more, I mean, of anything else you could think of. There's more videos of people making food and eating food on the internet than anything else.
So with that fact, do you think that this is helping or hindering the industry and the creativeness behind what people are able to do with food and within the food industry?
I have to say, as an industry insider and outsider, I really enjoy this newfound access that all these people have.
Yes.
What it's doing, it's really flushing out and frustrating the people who lack perspective.
Ooh, it's shaking the table.
It's shaking the table. So if baby Emily is on the internet showing you how to make a leftover salmon and putting seaweed on it and crunching it and the kids are dying for it, I'm loving it. Love an industry disruptor. I really do, you know, especially if it propels conversations forward. And so I don't personally use TikTok and even social media the way that I should because I have a lot of issues around food consumption and food waste, yep. food perfection, because I grew up in some instances of my life in food insecure situations. Yeah. And I'm very conscious of what that looks like. And so you won't find me at home every day creating food videos.
They're like, where's the content?
Where's the content, Hala? But there's other content I'm creating that people can't go and get. I'm going to the Congo and I'm collecting stories and recipes. I'm going to Beirut and I'm collecting stories. And I'm going to El Salvador and I'm cooking and creating. That's where I excel. So to your question, I love these young people that are coming in, or these people, young, old, whatever, that are coming in and saying, I want to add my voice to this.
Because I love that.
Too long in food, we've spoken enough about.
Yes, we have. Okay. And with that, we are going to go into rapid fire. I'm going to ask you 4 questions. After each question, I'm going to ask you who's on content. It doesn't have to be a content creator. It doesn't have to be a platform. But because you know so well that everything is content, I think you're going to do just well. Your first question, your favorite form of content, who's on content?
My favorite form of content is human connections, and I would say the people at large.
I love that. You need a reset. Who's on content?
I would say airplanes.
Come on. You need to be inspired. Who's on content?
I don't follow her, and the girls are going to hate me for saying this, and I'm not even the biggest consumer of her music and her products, but Rihanna.
Ma'am, always and forever.
Okay.
Queen mother. And she's coming out with new music for Wakanda Forever. Okay.
I mean, just the creativity of it all, the business aspect of it is so intriguing to me.
The soul of it all.
Absolutely.
Last rapid fire. You need to feel joy. Who's on content?
My community.
I love that. You started with community and ended with community. My last question for you, Howard, we've talked about community, we've talked about culture, we've talked about owning our cultural narratives and inviting people to have a different point of view. We've talked about disrupting industries to allow for further perspectives and new perspectives on things that have been tried and true. Metaverse, Web3, all of this content marketing is continuing to evolve and change at a rapid pace that is beyond anyone's comprehension. What do you think the future of our industry, your industry, is?
Ooh, that's a really good one. I'm not the biggest believer of tech. I'm not the biggest believer of it being our future. I think that if all of this were to go down tomorrow, you'd have to turn to your right and your left and see who's standing there and try to conjure up a connection.
Yes.
So whatever the future of these platforms are, I would encourage anyone that's listening to really get rooted in where you're standing.
And rooted in where you're standing.
And then start to figure out, what does that look like in 5 years? What does that look like in 10 years?
The intentionality behind the community that you're cultivating. Yeah.
You don't need to sell anything on the internet in terms of this connection you're trying to create.
Yep.
Like, and if you are selling it on the internet, make sure you're also doing it in real life.
Yes, girl, do it without Wi-Fi, because the girls were building empires.
Without Wi-Fi.
Without Wi-Fi. The girls built continents.
Yeah, and I think if you've got millions of followers, this is perfect. Like, whatever it is you're selling online, start to do it also in real life. I think too very often, I see people who are thriving on the internet, and then you see them in person, and you're like, are you okay?
You're like, girl, why are you so awkward? They don't have that digital filter.
I hope some of them are listening. Are you okay? Like, you start asking yourselves those questions now.
I love that. Hawa, you are my sister. You know, we are community members. We are in the same tribe. We share tribe members. And so I can't tell you how grateful I am for your time, but also more importantly, how grateful I am for your service through the food you provide. And so with that, Hawa Hassan, thank you for joining us on Who's on Content.
Thank you, EJ. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening. Be sure to follow us at The Real DBA and give us a rating and leave us a review. See you next week.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.